traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
I feel like I should do the countdown, but I don't think I could do it as well as Jeremy Jackson. But hello, I am Randy Harris. I am the co-host of the podcast AT Corner. Jeremy Jackson has been kind enough to let us hijack his introduction on Sports and Medicine broadcast. We're broadcasting from the Sports and Medicine update for 2023. We have with us Travis Turner, who just gave his presentation on sudden cardiac arrest in sport. The biggest thing that I noticed in Travis's bio is the NFL experience. And what I thought was very interesting was serving in the role of logistics with the Texans, right?
Yeah. So, operations and logistics. Yeah. So, I mean, I was an assistant athletic trainer and kind of that story, I guess my origin story before I became Spider-Man was so I actually went to grad school, West Virginia. And while I was, I guess even before that, I went to undergrad at Texas Lutheran University just outside of San Antonio. And while I was there, I was trying to figure out, how can I get to the NFL? That's what I want to do. I want to work in the NFL. And so one of the things that I decided to do was just stalk everyone that currently worked in the NFL and figure out where they went to school. So I did that, and I made just a tally sheet. And at the time, West Virginia was the number one school that had the most athletic trainers in the NFL. And so I was like, well, that's where I have to go to grad school. So applied, got in, went to grad school there. Knowing that whenever I was done, I would come out with a built-in network of NFL athletic trainers ready to at least see that on the resume and maybe push me into the maybe pile.
Success follows success.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's what I did. I actually got a summer internship with the Rams when they were still in St. Louis. That was because I'm really old. And then that kind of morphed into a season-long position. And then got, I said, hey, I loved my time here. Let's do it again. And at the time, Reggie, the head athletic trainer, he was like, yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah, we'll do it. We'll help you get another internship. And I was like, wait, what do you mean? He was like, oh no, you're not going to do another internship here. I was like, oh, I must have really, really, messed that up. And he was like, no, you already know how we do things. Go learn how to do it another way at the same level. And so they vouched for me enough here in Houston, which is great because it's close to home. I'm from San Antonio area. And so started as a intern with the Texans, moved into a full-time role. And that role kind of morphed as I was there. What I was good at was kind of the logistics and planning of when we went to London, when we did training camp, when we went to Mexico City, when we did training camp out of the city. Mm-hmm. And so kind of coordinating all of that, that's kind of how it came about is, hey, he's good at this. Let's just keep throwing more of that stuff that other people just don't really enjoy. Not that I super enjoy logistics, but I'm just kind of good at seeing a couple of steps ahead and being able to kind of tie it up before it unravels, if that makes sense. And so that's kind of how that evolved. I loved my time with the Texans. And then in 2019, I decided I needed to have a little bit more free time. and so I kind of transitioned out of the NFL, but yeah, I loved my time there, loved it. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
I love how you brought that up about the logistics part. Hey, he's organized. He's got it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of how it started. It kind of started as like, hey, you're the lowest man on the totem pole. Mm-hmm. You get these jobs that are like not super desirable. And then I guess I was good enough at it that they kept giving me more and more and more of that kind of job. Mm-hmm. And so, although I did a ton of patient care, I did a ton of the other stuff too, the operations, logistics, budget, kind of all of that stuff. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fun.
That's awesome. That's cool. Kind of going along the lines of the presentation today, which I thought was a really good review of some of these conditions that you probably don't hear of outside of being a student. And then you hear it and you're like, oh, I should remember that.
And should remember. Yes, exactly. Keyword should. Not I do.
Yeah.
And hey, that's why we're listening to this talk. Yeah,
exactly. One of the things that tends to come to mind now as, you know, the athletic trainer is like, okay, we understand the treatment part, like the emergency part, right? You know, the, you know, vital signs, CPR, AED, and then, okay, EMS, transport. But what does that kind of follow-up process kind of look like when you have someone who has had a cardiac event? And obviously it might be a little bit different based on the condition, but in general, what are you kind of looking for?
Yeah, that's actually a really tough question to answer. And kind of you already alluded to it. Each situation is going to be very unique. Mm-hmm. And like I said at the beginning of my talk, I am not a cardiologist. I do not claim to be one. I do not claim to be an expert in this specifically at all. But what I can tell you is, you know, we return people all the time for different things. And it's just, it's unique. Every single one of them is unique. I think you have to partner with a really good internal medicine physician. You need to have a really good relationship and open line of communication with the athlete and a cardiologist that really kind of understands athletics. If you happen to be in a rural area and have don't have a lot of access, try to get at least a contact of somebody kind of that works with athletes specifically in a cardiology type role. I think that will help you a ton to be able to just understand and bounce ideas. Hey, you know, we did, you know, you cleared them to do X, Y, and Z. They did it. They didn't have any issues. But the next day they said that they had, you know, they were more fatigued than they normally would have been. And just allowing to bounce that off of someone and then allowing kind of that mutual line of communication, I think, is going to be key in any return to play. And that's what you do with your orthos. Absolutely. That's what you do with, you know, anyone else anyway. So I don't think it's groundbreaking or anything different than you're already doing. It's just, how often do you have a text message conversation with a cardiologist? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, probably not.
Yeah.
But if you have a cardiac event on your returning someone, I bet you're going to have one daily. So I think that's kind of what it comes down to.
I mean, it's going to be a graduated return to play, which is very similar to something that we see a lot more commonly in a concussion.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. True. Very true. Very true. Yeah. And in those situations, you're going to partner with, you know, someone who's most likely, you know, especially if it's, I guess concussion would be a little bit different where it's if it's kind of a prolonged case or the return to play is kind of stunted by other things, then you tag in a specialist to help you out, but you're still going to be communicating with them and getting ideas of what X, Y, and Z, and should I do VOR1, VOR2, like what should I be doing in the concussion space. And so I think, yeah, probably very similar to that kind of approach.
I was going to say too, because I think there are physical therapists as well that specialize with like the cardiac events, right? Like that rehab for that.
Yeah, I think that those are, I could be wrong, so don't quote me on this, even though it's being recorded multiple ways.
It's on the record, but not on the record.
Yeah, no doubt. I think those PTs are normally they're not really associated with athletics.
Got it.
I could be wrong on that, and there may be some that are going to, you know, comment on wherever this is posted and tell me that I'm wrong. That's fine.
But and it's true, too, because like what it tends to be that higher, the more likely population or the bigger patient load with cardiac events probably tends to be a little bit older compared
older population,
to
yeah.
to maybe a like an athletic population, especially younger.
I mean, you've had a couple in track that you've had to monitor.
We've had some where like, hey, initial findings or like clinical findings, like, hey, this is kind of weird. You know, we'll do like a Holter and like stuff like that to kind of monitor. But I don't think I've ever had one that popped off as like, oh yeah, this is like a big concern.
Where they had like intervention or something.
Yeah.
It's more of, hey, yeah, gotcha. They did a Holter, it kind of came out normal, but here in the back of your head, just know that there's some abnormality here. Gotcha.
In regard, I don't know if you've had experience with any athletes that have had to wear a Holter. I know for me, like I was in a unique situation because, you know, I work track. So it wasn't like, there's not a lot of equipment, there's no contact. So really, the halter, they want to catch an episode, so they could probably try and run and stuff like that. But have you seen experience with athletes trying to play with a halter or anything like that?
Yeah, so I've definitely worked with athletes that have worn a halter. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I don't know if in game day I've ever had one, but for sure in practices, mm-hmm. In weightlifting and conditioning, all of those, I don't think that I've ever had anyone in a game situation, but for sure every other situation they've worn a halter.
Nice.
To just track what's going mm-hmm. on.
Any issues with like trying to protect the equipment, especially if it's like a contact sport? Have you had issues with that or?
Since it sits kind of underneath the shoulder pads and kind of the chest plate, perfect. I think it's pretty protected. Perfect. I have never had any issues with it. Yeah, that's a good. I mean. Other sports that don't have as robust chest protection, maybe there would be issues, but football, which is my experience, I think we're good.
Going towards now, like that prevention piece, right? This is, especially when you start talking cardiac, it's always, okay, let's look at the pre-participation physical. How effective is the PPE and actually being able to identify that at risk? I know there's been a lot of debate over the years of, hey, what should we be doing?
Yeah. So I kind of mentioned it in my talk, but if, you know, everyone is getting a medical history, a family history, they're getting, a self-reported family history from a 14-year-old, or a 15-year-old freshman in high school. Like, yeah, I mean, they don't know anything. No offense. I think getting a really robust family history is important. Knowing if you have anyone in your family that has died from a cardiac event at a young age, or just in general, I think is good to always note and have on your paperwork. And then I also mentioned it's probably better to have like an internal medicine physician mm-hmm. at your physicals, listening to heart and lung sounds than your orthopedic surgeon who's doing it once a year because you asked them to come out and do it at their physicals. I think that that's really important because some of these things can be caught by just listening to those sounds and knowing what to listen for. But also, I am a huge proponent of having a pre-participation EKG mm-hmm. just so you know. Now, is it cost prohibited for some locations and some situations? Absolutely not. And you have to weigh that and mm-hmm. kind of figure that out. But for me, if money's not an option, I would say EKG everyone every year, no matter what. That's what I would do.
That's awesome. For at least that physical aspect and the going into the medical history, have you noticed if a history of COVID has kind of made like that physical, like, okay, hey, maybe I'm going to listen to like different areas for the heart, or maybe I'm going to look at a different thing on the EKG. Have you seen like COVID kind of changing how we do the physical?
I have not seen that. But I have noted to myself that there should be some additional questioning in regards to COVID, just based on the most recent research that's come out. And I mentioned it in my talk as well about myocarditis and kind of the prevalence of that following a COVID infection. And so I think that that's something that we probably should be looking at more of. I have not seen anyone change mm-hmm. their pre-participation questionnaire based on COVID yet. I haven't. Probably some have, but I haven't seen it.
See, COVID, man, just can't escape
it. Still here.
Still here.
Still here.
So, we also like to talk about like being prepared for a cardiac event or, an emergency event. And that's where your EAP and training comes into play. But what would you recommend for the athletic trainer to stay current and stay prepared for a sudden cardiac arrest?
Yeah, so I randomly worked an outreach event that was just kind of posted. No one had picked it up, and it was kind of close to my house. And so I was like, I'll just, I can go work this. And I walk in. I notice there's an AED on the wall in the hallway. It was a basketball game. And so I travel with my own AED that's provided through my employment, but I was like, I'm just going to see if the AED is completely dead. The one on the wall is completely dead.
Wow.
No, like, won't even turn on. Battery's non-existent. Like, I don't even know. I looked to see if, so the pediatric pads had not expired, but the adult pads had. So it was just like, what is going on here? So my biggest thing, I think, would be if you travel and you have access to an AED that's portable and you can move it around and it doesn't have to be stationary on a wall in your facility, I would travel with it. I would have it with you. If you have one that has to be on a wall, I would check it weekly. Every week I would check it. If I work a game, if I'm at somewhere, my AED gets opened, I turn it on, I check the expiration date on the pads. I know that sounds crazy that I do that every week, but like, you never know when that date's going to sneak up on you. I make sure it can turn on, and then I just close it, and I have peace of mind that if I need it, I've got it, it's ready to go. I think that's key, making sure you're current on your CPR AED. But another thing is, if you're the home, if you are the home provider, make sure that you have a relationship with your ambulance service.
Ooh.
Make sure that you've called them, talked to them in the last 6 months. You know, you don't have to call them all the time, but say, hey, you know, thanks for all your help during the fall seasons. We're starting our winter season sports. They're all indoor. They're in this gym. Do you guys want to come out and see where the quickest access is if we call you? I think those things, being able to communicate with them beforehand so they don't go to the front office, so they don't go to this, they don't go, you know, they know how to get in. Do you have an administrator that's working the game? Every time I worked, because I was a GA at a high school, every time I worked a game, the administrator that was in charge of that game, I would go up to him and say, hey, do you have keys to that gate? If they said no, I'd be like, you need to get keys to that gate, because yeah. I have to call an ambulance. Like, so just don't assume that, you know, everything's going to be how it's supposed to be. Like, just be proactive. Let them know, hey, do you have just making sure you have keys to that gate, right? Okay, cool. Thanks. If I need anything, if someone goes down on the field, just be at the ready in case I have to call an ambulance. You know, just I think those things are really important, because like I said in the presentation, 3 minutes is not very long.
No.
to get an AED on a person, to increase their ability to kind of recover from an event like this.
Absolutely.
You make a really good point with with PRN work, because you never know what you're walking into, yeah, what they
never,
have.
Never.
And what exits or entrances and what keys.
Yeah. Yeah, if I work, so I work some PRN just to kind of fill in some time. But when I walk in, I'm always like, okay, I just had to go up a step to get into the building. So where's the ramp? Where's the, because they're not, you know, I mean, yeah, they can throw a, you know, pick a gurney up over a step, but you know, what is the way that they're going to get some, get somebody in here to be able to get them out and transport them appropriately. I think that is, that's key. And that may be kind of the logistics background in me, is that I'm always like, okay, but what about this? What about that? What about everything? So, yeah, I think PRN work, that's the scariest work out there.
Oh, 100%.
You're not in control of anything.
No.
We also bring up a really good point about weekly checks, the aid. I mean, we do monthly checks, but as long as you're, like, making sure that it's not just on the wall dead, like you said.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the day that I checked our vacuum splints for our football game is the day that I needed to use them.
Yeah.
The day that we realized that the pump was broken.
Yeah.
That morning. So luckily that's like something, you know, so as with any other emergency equipment, AED is something you don't want to mess with in those 3 minutes that you have
to
increase survivability.
Yeah. You don't want to send someone to go get the AED and they use that time to run there and run back and the AED's dead and now you lost the 3 minutes.
Yep.
Now you're starting over and they have to run to go get an AED from a different, you know, the gym down the, you know, wherever. So yeah, I completely agree. I think that just being a little bit more prepared is key. And I think as all in all professions, we get a little bit complacent. But I think when it comes to, you know, you are the healthcare provider out there. Like, that's you. You're it. a lot of times. And so if you're not on top of that, that, you know, that falls on you. So I think that being able to kind of just check those things, checking the splints before a game, yeah, I think that's key. Weekly may not be necessary,
but
you know, it's not bad.
Yeah. And you know, it's some of the AEDs, like they do have like a daily check to where it has like a green indicator saying like, oh, this works. And if that's switched to a different color or an X or off, it doesn't work. So yeah, I mean, you can definitely check it pretty often.
Definitely.
So last point, as far as like that administrator aspect, because you know, a lot of them are at the game and most kind of games need some kind of admin there. How do you kind of recommend educating them on here's what your role is for an emergency event or a cardiac event?
Yeah, I think that comes down to how are you preparing overall at the beginning of the year. So are you doing CPR training for your coaching staff? Are you doing, you know, all of that kind of stuff? And I think that kind of folds into it. So you do, I don't know if some schools do like spine board training, like, hey, I'm the only athletic trainer here. If we have to spine board someone and the ambulance is not here, I'm going to need five of you coaches to come down. Like, I'm going to need the help. So not that they need to know 100% what to do, so it's like super flawless and under 2 minutes and like all of that stuff. But are you aware that I'm in charge whenever it's time to spine board and you need to listen to me, and it's, you know, this is how we're going to roll, and at least have seen it once or twice? I think sitting down with your administrators once a year is probably enough, or maybe even at the beginning of each sports season to kind of just say, hey, just a friendly reminder, you know, whoever's going to be covering this game, they're going to have, we're still using that gate for ambulance, right? Like, just kind of don't play dumb, but like just kind of pose it as, hey, I just want to make sure that I'm right. Mm-hmm. And then I think that will get them to think also. And they can kind of put the things in place that maybe they have forgotten to do because it's been 12 months since football season started, you know? So I think that's important.
And remember those keys, the correct keys.
Correct keys. I've got my car keys. Okay. Is that going to help us?
Well, thank you again, Travis. That was a great talk, and it was a good reminder of just how important being prepared for that sudden cardiac event is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you again to Jeremy Jackson and the Sports Medicine Broadcast for letting us commandeer this segment. I'm Randy Harris, and my wife, Sandra.
That's me.
We're with AT Corner Podcast. You can get a hold of us at AT Corner on our Instagram, our Facebook group. But Jeremy Jackson and the Sports Medicine Broadcast can be contacted via... Man, he's got a lot of ways. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. He's definitely accessible. So
sportsmedicine.com. There is a short link, but my phone's live recording right now, so I don't have access to it. But it's sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Facebook, I think, is where you can find a bunch of the episodes from this Memorial Hermann sports medicine update.
Yep. Awesome. Thank you.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.